I've found away from everything, from work and everything that was happening with Danielle, just not long after it, golf was my release. Really, it was my release. And I could just go away for three, four hours at a time and just forget about everything.
Hi, and welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast, where deep, meaningful, and philosophical conversations about golf and life are par for the course. I'm your host, Chris Lynch. In today's episode, I am in conversation with Craig McKee. Craig is an avid golfer and a member of Elderslie Golf Club in Renfrewshire, Scotland, an 18-hole Parkland golf course designed by famous golf architect James Braid. The course boasts beautiful panoramic views across Renfrewshire, which even William Wallace himself would have approved of. Craig and I recorded this podcast at his home in Paisley, where I was given a warm welcome into the family home and treated to some great Scottish hospitality by Craig's wife Angela and his son, Craig. A central figure in today's episode is Craig's daughter, Danielle, who passed away in November 2017 at the age of 23. As Craig explains, Danielle always had an incredible zest for life, a great sense of humour, and above all else, a positive and resilient outlook in the face of adversity. Throughout her life, Danielle valiantly battled through a variety of health complications, mainly caused by DiGeorge syndrome, or as it's otherwise known, 22q11 deletion syndrome. DiGeorge is a rare and relatively unknown genetic condition which is believed to affect around 1 in 4,000 babies and can cause health complications including heart defects, learning difficulties, and psychiatric conditions such as schizophrenia. Since Danielle's passing in 2017, Craig and his family have been keeping her memory alive through a variety of means. Of particular note and relevance to us here in the Golf Yourself Healthy community, Craig and family have been organising and running a charity golf day at Elderslie Golf Club for several years now in support of Max Appeal. Max Appeal is a UK-based charity whose mission is to try to ensure that every person with DiGeorge syndrome lives as independent and prosperous a life as possible. As they say at Max Appeal, that is not mission impossible, and that is a statement which we strongly agree with at Golf Yourself Healthy. As such, it's an honour and pleasure to be helping in some small way, we hope, with this podcast, to be helping to raise awareness for a condition which, after Down syndrome, is the second most common genetic condition, and one that very few people seem to have ever heard of. Please make sure you stick around and listen to this episode in full, as at the end of our conversation, we will be playing a song written by Craig in honour of Danielle and produced and played by December, one of Craig's favourite local bands. YouTube links for the song and music video are listed in the show notes. It's a deeply moving and powerful song, and by listening to it and watching the video, you are sure to get a sense of who Danielle was as a person and how she is remembered by Craig and all of those who knew her and loved her. Before we head over to Craig and I's conversation, please make sure to subscribe and follow the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast on your podcasting platform of choice, and also leave us a 5-star review to help us grow the show and get the word out to the masses that golf is good for you. You can follow us on social media, Instagram at Golf Yourself Healthy and X at GYHpod. Also, don't forget to head over to golfyourselfhealthy.com to read our latest journal articles and to sign up to future newsletters by using the contact tab and providing your name and email address. Our latest journal article written by myself entitled Golf Yourself Nostalgic will be published around the time that this episode airs. So go to golfyourselfhealthy.com and check that out. Oh, and finally, always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.
Craig, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for agreeing to be on the podcast. Thank you for also having me in your family home and in your man shed at the back of the garden.
Not a problem.
I've just enjoyed some very good hospitality from Craig and his wife, Angela. So we've just, Craig, we've actually got, in the early days of this podcast, I've discovered we've got a few international listeners who I'm sure have probably never experienced a square sausage before. So talk our American or international listeners through what they're missing out on.
Oh, that's a good one. I don't think they're missing out on much, if I'm being honest with you. It's a Scots delicacy, so if you put it in front of an Englishman or an American, if you want to say that, I think they say, what the hell is that? But to us, it's a tasty treat. There we go.
Well, it is a tasty treat, and it's gone down an absolute treat with me. And actually, I've come up here from Wales, where I live, and taken one of my dogs up with me. And we're in Paisley, and I took my dog Mango into a cafe yesterday, just around the corner from my dad's flat, where they've got a wee doggy menu, and they serve up mashed Lorne sausage and black pudding. So my dog, my Welsh dog, Welsh Cypriot dog, has now just been properly initiated into Scottish culture. So yeah, as is fairly customary on, certainly in these early episodes of Golf Yourself Healthy, as much as possible, I've tried to travel to where my guests are and combine a podcast conversation with a round of golf. So we are, Craig and I are recording this on a Sunday morning, and shortly after we're done here, we're going to go across to Elderslie Golf Club. So Craig, I do normally have a tendency to, when I play a new course, research it and try and plan out my round, but I've not done that at all. Okay. I've deliberately kind of, I'm going in blind here. Mm-hmm. So is there anything that I need to know, or we always use the chance to tell our listeners who are golf fans, like kind of what's Elderslie Golf Course like?
It's actually a very good golf course in Renfrewshire. It's in great condition for the time of the year, early March. The greens, fair play to the greenkeepers, have done a great job. Still a bit damp underfoot, but it's coming on. So I think the summer's going to be looking very, very good. The course itself, it's a tricky course. So you don't need to be a big hitter at Elderslie. That's my only tip.
Okay.
Second shot is vital.
Great, that's good. Let's see if I actually heed that warning and just hopefully leave the driver in the bag more than is needed.
I'll keep you right.
Good man. Do you know something I learned yesterday, which I think is disputed in the course of history, but so my dad, who lives here in Paisley, like yourself, and a friend of mine went around Paisley Town yesterday and went to Paisley Abbey.
Yeah.
There's one of the stained glass windows is of William Wallace.
Correct.
And you're nodding, you know where I'm going with this.
Yep.
So tell us about the significance of Elderslie and William Wallace.
Well, William Wallace was born in Elderslie.
Yeah.
Before he moved up into the Lowlands Highlands, and it's very well celebrated in Elderslie and probably Renfrewshire as a whole. So
yeah. There's a monument, right?
There's a Wallace monument right beside the Elderslie Golf Club.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
As you're walking around, you're basically on the hills where he was born. So
yeah. Well, hey, look, again, you know, I'm sort of almost inadvertently trying to act as the Elderslie Tourist Board here, you know. So like, again, if any British or international listeners who like to come overseas and play a bit of golf, there's your history lesson as well.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic little village as well, with some nice pubs and restaurants in it. So
yeah,
very nice place to be.
Good. Look forward to it. Craig, let's go on then to talk about the spirit of your game. How did it all start for you with golf?
Oh, I probably started golfing was about 1920. My dad actually gave me a set of golf clubs and started playing from there. Not very well, if I'm being honest with you. Then I started getting into it a bit more and played a bit more and got a bit better. And then the kids came along. So I had to take a kind of sabbatical of membership, that kind of thing, maybe get the odd couple of games in a year. And then I took it back up again, maybe about 15 years ago. And it's been progressive ever since. I was a member at Paisley Golf Club, which is just literally a mile from here. And then I changed jobs, had to again take a sabbatical because I was away quite a lot. So it just wasn't proven financially. I'm saying, well, I'm just playing about, it was four rounds and it's cost me about £150 a round. So I'm saying, look, just take a back seat for a couple of years, which I did. And then with a few friends, we decided to join Elderslate, and we've been there since, I think it's 2015. It's the most frustrating game in the world. You think you're getting better, then just that one bad round just puts you back down again. So yeah, I've been doing well last few seasons, so get the handicap down to 10, so going on the right direction. So, but it's every game's a challenge.
Definitely.
Every game's a challenge. I think you play two or three great games and you say, oh, I'm on it now. I'm on it now. Then next round you just get and blow balls into the woods and everything else. And where did that come from? So.
Well, you know, the essence of this podcast is, amongst other things, about, you know, the life lessons that golf can teach you. And it's a great leveler, isn't it? Golf,
absolutely.
You know, keeps you on your toes. There was something I had in my notes that I was going to ask you. So given, you know, you've talked about your handicap and where you're at the moment, like, are you the kind of person that sets goals for yourself season to season with your golf or round to round?
If you'd asked me that question 2 or 3 years ago, I'd have said yes. I've got to the opinion now, it is what it is. It is what it is. I'd like to keep round about where I am. I've worked hard to get to where I am, and I'd like to just keep it round about there. But 2 or 3 bad rounds can just put you, especially with the new handicap system, can just put you back straight back up to 13, 14 easily.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's true, but a mate of mine said to me, you know, texting him the other day, and you know, he's in recent years got himself down to sort of the sort of handicap you are at now, but he was saying, oh, you know, playing this time of year, it's creeping back up kind of thing. And I said to him, hey, you know, it's okay. It's a different kind of game at this time of year.
Yeah.
At least that's what I tell myself. I've got all the excuses up my sleeve.
Haven't we all?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I've got outs for everything. So Craig, ultimately me being here today, you know, I just want to sort of give the listener a bit of an understanding and a background as to how you and I met, first of all. So, you know, I've already shared with the listener about my son Innes and how, you know, we found out after we lost him and in the post-mortem that he had a condition called De Jour syndrome.
Yes.
And Golf Yourself Health I've built and put out there very much to honour him and his life and also to kind of, you know, give back to other people, be of service to other people. Mm-hmm. At the point where I started thinking about this idea for this podcast, and also generally was just trying to sort of find other like-minded people or people that have been through similar experiences.
Yeah,
I think I've told you this already. I just Google searched De Jour's golf. Uh-huh. And if you do that, and I did it again last night, up come you, your family, you know, you, your wife, Angela, and your son, Craig, and your daughter, Danielle's story. So if I may ask you just to tell the listener about Danielle's story and your family's story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Danielle was born on 22nd of February 1994. It would have been her 30th birthday just last week. Mm. So, and straight away, the doctors kind of spotted something was wrong. And it took about 3-4 weeks to get a diagnosis, which was pretty quick back then. Yeah, and it came back. It was De Jour syndrome. Very, very unheard of at that moment in time. It was a kind of relatively new illness. But anyway, we managed that. So she was born with 2 holes in her heart, that kind of thing. So, and other kind of minor things. But within 6 weeks, I think it was, they'd operated on Danielle, repaired her heart, and she thrived from then on. And she did have a tough start to life. There's no getting away from that. But as I said, she started to thrive. She went to mainstream school and all the rest of it. But she had illnesses because with De Jour, your immune system is lowered. So she did have illnesses and all the rest of it. But she went to mainstream school, loads of friends, everything else. So, and lived a normal life like you or I do. So, and in that way, she was pretty fortunate because if you look into De Jour, it affects people in a lot of different ways. So fast forward to 2017, we were on holiday and Danielle started feeling unwell, raised temperature and feeling sick and all kind of things like that. So we really thought nothing of it. We just say, look, it's just another illness, that kind of thing that she picked up. And anyway, within a couple of months, it just wasn't getting any better. So we took her to hospital. It took a while, a long while, because DeGeorge is a tricky illness, very tricky illness. So they couldn't really see if it was part of DeGeorge or if this was something else it was working on, which it turned out to be. And Danielle was diagnosed with lymphoma, Hodgkin's lymphoma. So she was diagnosed that on 3rd of November and passed away on the 5th of November due to complications with medications and all the rest of it. So it was really, really pretty quick. But the lymphoma does, although it's completely different from DeGeorge, there's a curve there that can actually, you can relate back to because of certain illnesses, and these certain illnesses, if they're not treated properly, it can cause lymphoma. And effectively, that's what's happened. So we were absolutely devastated because it just came straight out of the blue. Just Danielle was a fighter, as what I say. She was bullish in everything she had. She says, I'm going to beat this. And even when she was diagnosed with the lymphoma, she says, we'll get through this, no problem. And she was the one that was, no tears, I don't want any tears, that kind of thing. And she just rapidly went downhill. And it was complications with her medication. So it took us quite a while to get over that, as you would expect. So she passed away aged 23. So we're thankful we had great 23 years with her and lots of memories and everything else. But we had to put a focus on, say, right, for our son, Craig, as well. So,
because when Danielle passed, how old was she, did you say?
She was 23.
So. And that was in what year?
2017.
Yeah. And Craig, your son, is how old now?
He's 24 now. He'd actually just turned 18.
Right.
Literally a few weeks before Danielle passed. So it's as if I was, and I say it and it may sound a bit off the cuff, but as if she was waiting for Craig to become a man, 18. Mm. That's the way I kind of focus on it sometimes. It was a hard blow. It was a really hard blow for myself, Angela, and all the family and all our friends, everything else. Mm. Danielle was just such a popular girl. I mean, even so, when we were arranging her funeral, when we were speaking to the funeral directors, they were saying, well, we've got this place, we can have the funeral. I said, no, you're going to have to get bigger. Mm. So we ended up with a church not far away from where we are just now, and there was over 1,000 people at our funeral.
Wow.
So that kind of tells you the kind of effect she had on people.
Yeah.
So we said, look, we need to build on that and keep Danielle's memory alive, which we've done. We've done through lots of charity work and obviously the charity golf day every year. Mm. We've done other things like the kilt walks and this cycles round Isle of Cumbrae, that kind of thing. Mm. And we've raised a fair few bob for it. So the golf day is the big one. That's the big one every year. So it started in 2018. And it's just gradually, I think it started with 15 teams of four balls. And it's just gradually get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's now up to 30 teams this year. And wow. I could probably sell more. But I don't think the golf club would thank me for that. Because it takes up a lot of time.
So it's at Elderslie. Is that where your home club that you have it
that's
at?
It, so.
So what's, I mean, that is just brilliant, by the way. And if I can say, you know, there's... Yeah, it's I kind of, having walked through your house now and been out here, and you know, I see Danielle's, you know, you've got a mug, you're drinking out of a mug with Danielle's face, and you're very much keeping her memory alive, and I can see that. It's beautiful in that way and so many other ways, but the golf days in particular. So what's been the key almost behind that growing so much? You know, is it, because I'm curious, like who goes to it? Is it mostly friends, family, colleagues, or is it grown beyond that?
It started off just friends, family, colleagues, and some of my customers. And it's just built from then. To give you a bit of perspective, I work in the plumbing and heating industry. Mm. I'm the manager of a plumber's merchant. So plumbers like to golf. I've found that out over the years. So we opened the invitation to lots of plumbing companies and manufacturers, if you want to put it, boiler manufacturers, pipe manufacturers, that kind of thing. And it's just grown and grown. And every single one of these guys support it every single year. So it's fantastic. So, and that's given me a lot of heart. That's given me a lot of heart. I mean, it's not even a question anymore. It's when is the golf day? And that's it. Just it's the 1st of January every year. When's your golf day this year? So I can get it in the calendar. So it's just, it's became a big event. So it's getting to the point, it's running away from me a wee bit, but I've got loads of helpers. Family, Angela, my wife and my son, they help out. And we're family and a lot. This is where it becomes good because all Danielle's friends come.
Yeah.
And our ex-colleagues, they come and help out as well.
Yeah.
So it does take a lot to organise. If you can imagine 120 guys golfing. I mean, so it does take a lot to organise. You couldn't do it yourself. So it's got to such a good place now that actually Julie and Paul, who started Max Appeal.
Yeah, let's go on and talk about Max Appeal then, because they're the main beneficiaries,
so
right?
So that's where the charity, where any funding we get from the charity goes to. This is a national charity, but they're very much unheard of. So we contacted Paul and Julie initially when we started, and Paul, who's a golfer, funnily enough, he says, I would like to come. I said, absolutely, you and Julie's more than welcome. So for the last 3-4 years, I've been coming up every year for it, and they mark it into their diary as well. So, but Max Appeal's close to us because it's the only charity out there that's actually raising funds for kids with DeGeorge, and it helps. So it's a support network for the parents and the siblings of the child that's got DeGeorge. And they also do things like weekends away for the kids, that kind of thing. So, and this is where all this funding goes to. So it's important to us. I mean, and again, I suppose it's Daniel's legacy for us as well.
Definitely.
Definitely. They're a great charity and they're good people as well. So.
Yeah, you know, I think what I fully intend to do after we've recorded today, Craig, is, you know, share out a few links and resources for, because, you know, for this podcast, it's, for as much as it's about, you know, chatting about golf and why that's good for us and all the rest of it, it's very much also about championing good causes.
Uh-huh.
And also, you know, I'd love for the listener to almost be more educated on conditions like DeGeorge syndrome, for example. I don't know about you, but because I guess obviously throughout Danielle's lifetime and her condition and how that manifested in her life, you've had a lot longer, if you like, of living with DeGeorge syndrome, whereas me and my wife, Kim, it's more, you know, because we found out about it in Innes's case, we've had more of a curiosity to read on it and research it and understand it. And how does it, I know you touched on it briefly, but what have you learned about DeGeorge syndrome almost and kind of how that affects people and, you know, the different spectrum of...
Well, that is, DeGeorge syndrome is it's a broad spectrum of heart defects, kidney defects, cleft palates.
Mm.
These kind of things, those thymus glands. I mean, it's just, I'm not a clinician, so.
No, sure. Neither of us are, you know. But
it's all I know, all I can, the simple way to put it to the listeners is it's a tricky condition to deal with, very tricky condition to deal with. And every child is different.
Mm.
Every child is different. As far as DeGeorge is, it's after Down syndrome, it's the second most common chromosome disorder.
Yeah.
So, and not a lot of people know that. So, and it's very unheard of.
Yeah.
That, which is, I think this is what Max Appeal's purpose is to get out there and say, look, this needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
So I think and I'm get my stats maybe corrected, but I think it affects 1 in 4,000 children.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, that's
which is a lot.
Yeah.
It is a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. But then it is a lot, but then because when you look at it in its totality, it's a lot. But actually, for me, when I read and heard 1 in 4,000, especially when it happens to your child, you know, that feels like it is still rare, you know, as in so much as, or at least the awareness and understanding of it isn't where it could be. And so to that point, actually, you know, you and I were talking before we went on air with this episode was how, I think just back in December, actually, and again, I can share it out for the listeners, it was discussed, debated in Parliament in the UK anyway, about trying to push through a paper, a bill to, as I understood it, was to do more screening at birth,
yes,
for example, for de Jour syndrome. So, and that got passed through. So yeah. I think that can only be a good thing.
Yep, yep. It definitely is. And it's become an international thing as well.
Yeah.
It's Paul and Julie, I think it's Julie's the driving force behind it. She meets up with counterparts from different countries all over the world. And so it is getting more focus on it now. But
yeah,
as an illness, it's still very, very unheard of, is yeah, to really use.
You were saying how obviously losing Danielle and the circumstances in which you lost her were very difficult. But you know what, looking back now, you know, what are those kind of lessons that, you know, is there anything you've taken away from losing Danielle that you've kind of really tried to, in terms of how that might have changed your outlook on life these days?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's what I would say is, and everybody's guilty of this, is you take life for granted. You take your kids for granted. You take your day-to-day life for granted. That's changed for Angela, Craig and I. We're now at the point of life's for living.
Yeah.
If there's something we want to do, we'll do it. We're not ones to just say, oh no, we need to think about the future. No, let's do it now. Because what happened with Danielle just came, there was a lightning bolt. Mm. It just came straight out of the blue. We did not expect it. Don't think anybody expected it. So you just, it's an old cliche, you just don't know what's around the corner.
Mm.
So that's changed my outlook in life, definitely. So if yeah, we want to do things, we do it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so, if I can touch on something briefly here, Craig, because, you know, this is now the second time we're meeting in person. I yep, hope it's the second amongst many times more, you know, in this relationship developing. But when I met you for the first time in person a few months ago, you were talking to me about how you and your wife, Angela, have kind of very much, you now, even more so than you maybe would have done before, recognise that importance of open communication with each other
yeah,
and talking. Because my wife, Kim, and I have definitely found that's been so important because, you know, us two as individuals, we grieve in different ways yeah, and we feel in different ways, but we've very much learned that we've got to talk to each other, as difficult as that might be and as hard as those emotions might be feeling, you know, and I've spoken about this in a previous episode with my friend Ben, who I've, yeah, I've spoken to you about as well, and he's talked on similar and how these challenges that come up in relationships. So, I mean, would you say, and even just reflecting on being a man, Craig, and sort of where we as men don't, you know, it's that stereotype that we don't talk about feelings so much, but how is that side of things kind of developed for you since?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I am that stereotypical man. I'm very deep and I did show emotion, that's not true, but I wouldn't open up to that emotion. I'm just a stiff upper lip, let's move on. But it wasn't as easy as that. It wasn't as easy as that. So Angela was encouraging me to open up. And the biggest thing, I could talk to Angela and I could. It was easier to talk to a stranger than it was to family, if that makes sense.
Mm.
And as time got on, it was starting to eat me up a bit. So I did have to go to counselling, and I'm not embarrassed to admit that, because I didn't think I needed it, but I did. I needed grief counselling. So, and that gave me a broader outlook and saying, look, I do need to open up. So, and especially to my son, Craig, because we don't talk enough. At that point, we do speak now, but it was just brief conversations in the car, going to the football or going here and there. But that's helped me. That's helped me as time goes on, but I would still say I'm still quite private and deep. So, and as I said, I found it easier to speak to strangers than as to speak to family, but I now realise that they care, they want to know I'm okay. That's all that, as I'm talking about family, they want yeah, to know that I'm okay and everything else. So,
do you know that's so interesting, actually, something you said there, Craig, about finding it easier to open up to strangers than it is your family. That hasn't occurred to me. Well, it maybe has, but I kind of feel that too. It's a strange one because, you know, I've found since losing Innes, this podcast has given me the platform to talk about him more openly yeah, and stuff. But it's, I think certainly because, especially around the time I lost him, that was the biggest thing going on in my life. And maybe leading me into sort of how you find an experience, because you and I have talked about this before, this idea of continuing to keep your daughter's memory alive and talking about her, but how do you find bringing her up in conversation with, you know, kind of people generally?
Yeah, I mean, it's again, it's different. People are different. Some people are quite happy to, you haven't to speak about Danielle, but you can, in those other situations, you bring Danielle's name up and you can feel the awkwardness.
Mm.
You've probably experienced that yourself.
Definitely.
You can feel that awkwardness, and that's fine. That's only human.
Mm-hmm.
Every people reacts differently. And as I say, she lived. You know what I mean? She's a big part of her life. So, and I'd still talk as if she's still here. You know what I mean? And I think that maybe makes people feel a wee bit more awkward. But that's in the few now. So I think people are just used to me bringing her name up and everything else. So, and it's as people get to know me, they know Danielle is part of our family.
Yeah.
Well, even though they didn't know her, this is newer people, even though they didn't know her, they just say as well.
Well, I get the sense that you bringing her up and talking about her like she's still here, it's as long as you know you're doing that for you.
Yeah.
Your own benefit, not so much for anyone else. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's where I find myself at now in talking about Innes. I'm doing it for, you know, just my own healing, and rather than doing it to sort of try and draw some form of reaction and like you say, the other person will deal with it in whatever way they want to deal with it, and everyone deals with things differently, and that's fine. You were saying that Danielle, even right up to the point where she had that diagnosis of Hodgkin's lymphoma, very positive outlook, and it sounds like everything you tell me about her, everything I've read about her, the size of the funeral and how she was loved, like very, just a very outgoing character, a very, very personable person, right? Yeah. So what's, is there any story of Danielle's that like makes you laugh or makes you smile, or that, you know, you remember especially fondly, that for you just completely typifies who she was as a person?
Angela and I were speaking about this just a few weeks ago when we were, the last time we were in fact, it was the last holiday we had with Danielle in Fuerteventura. So we decided to get the ferry from Fuerteventura over to Lanzarote.
Mm.
And on the way over, this crossing over the Atlantic, just crossing through I'm trying to think what you would call it, like an inlet.
Yeah.
The waves are just horrendous. And this boat was going up and down and up and down. And Danielle's gran was with us on holiday anyway. So they were going, Danielle said, be quiet and all the rest of it. Then they started kind of laughing at Danielle, and Danielle was getting really wound up and all the rest of it. So why are you laughing and buggers? And I'm just trying to tell you, just be quiet and all the rest of it. And Danielle was really starting to get wound up. Anyway, because Danielle was getting wound up, I was getting wound up. And we didn't argue a lot. I was like, Danielle, we had a bit of an argument on this ferry. And Angela and her mum there sitting laughing and all the rest of it. Then this was making Danielle worse. So I'm saying, you need to give this a Bible. So I was getting all wound up about it. 5 minutes later, Danielle starts laughing with them at me because I'm getting wound up. And that was Danielle. She could just flip things in her head like that. And just, it was, and I still laugh about it to this day, saying, you bound me up that much that day. It was me. It ended up being the bloody butt of the joke. So it was. that's the way she was.
She stitched you up completely.
She did stitch me up.
I wanted to ask you again, we talk in this podcast about the theme of golf being good for you. Equally, you said earlier, it's the most frustrating game on the planet, but we love it really, don't we? We always keep coming back to it. So for you, Craig, I mean, both generally, you know, how would you say golf is good for you, and how, if at all, has it helped you since losing Danielle?
Oh, it's definitely, once Danielle passed, it took me a couple of months probably to get back playing golf again. And then you've got this awkwardness because you're playing with your mates and all the rest of it. And I'll be honest, they were brilliant. They were brilliant. And it was actually one point I actually said to him, I says, look, guys, if I'm just being bloody miserable, just tell me to piss off. And all that, don't be daft. And they were brilliant with me.
Mm.
And I've found, away from everything, from work and everything that was happening with Danielle. Just not long after it, golf was my release. Really, it was my release. And I could just go away for three, four hours at a time and just forget about everything. Just forget about everything. And fair play to my mates because they helped me with that. And so, and I think that's where that helped me. And Angela's just a stereotypical golf widow. And she's like, you're no golfing again. But even she's got to the point and saying, no, you need your golf.
Yeah.
Because that is keeping you in there. It's keeping your mind straight. I mean, and it's definitely, that's how it's helped me. And I still get around the golf course, and if I'm in a bad game, I look to the skies. I'm looking for that. When Daniel, give me something here that makes me laugh.
Yeah.
It makes me laugh as if Daniel's going to help me here. But it takes that pressure off me as well. Just things like that. And people think that sounds daft, but it's, I'm not alone in that because I've spoke to other people and they say, oh, you're looking to the skies and all that kind of thing as well. Don't worry about it.
you're definitely not alone in that because I said it to you before, like I sort of channel Innes's memory, or if I'm standing over a shot and it's kind of I feel tense or whatever, and I think, just think of Innes. And it does actually, more often than not, it helps. It puts me in a good frame of mind, you know. Helps.
100%. That's exactly the point I'm just trying to make there.
Yeah, definitely. Now, after the several years of doing the charity golf day in support of Max Appeal, have you actually found that, you know, for instance, a lot of Danielle's friends come and help out and things? Has it helped to attract new people into golf? Like, have you seen people come into it who are kind of, or are they all quite seasoned golfers?
No, definitely not. I mean, there's within the plumbing industry and the manufacturer's reps, the guys I kind of spoke about earlier, there's a lot of them don't golf, but they make a point of it. Craig, my son, golfed when he was younger, but I'm talking about 14 years ago. He came back last year, got the clubs out, and a few of his mates who don't golf. So it's encouraging. I'd probably say there's about maybe out of the 120 at golf, probably about 100, maybe 20, 30 that don't golf regular. So
yeah,
it brings them out for the day. So
that's good. You know, because it makes me think there's something about, you know, some golfers can take themselves very seriously, you know, too seriously sometimes. But I'm getting the impression almost that with the vibe of, like, because it's in support of a very good cause, it's for, you know, it's for a personal cause and everything. Generally, what you find is people aren't taking themselves too seriously in that form of golf, and they're just there for a good, there's the odd few.
There's always some that just take it a bit too seriously. Just to make it a leveller in the first hole, everybody's got to tee off with a pair of boxing gloves on.
Yeah, so I think you told me
even
that.
Even the low handicappers struggle with that. So, and that just takes the nervousness off these guys that don't golf, because we've all been there, the knees trembling on the first tee because there's a big crowd watching.
Yeah.
So we insist that they've got to wear the boxing gloves to tee off, and it just levels everything off. It makes it a bit of fun, and these guys can go and play their game of golf.
Nice icebreaker, get a few laughs going, ease people into it, because, yeah, that's a great leveller. Yeah, good. So, Craig, maybe one of my last questions for you is going to be around, going to ask you to a section we like to call The Eagle Has Landed on this podcast. So the idea being, talk us through a particular golf shot that you've hit that's lived long in the memory and just is just was a great success and gives you, you know, brings up positive.
There's been a few, but I would say my favourite would be, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, we played Carnoustie, obviously up in the north of Scotland, and it was always one of my aims was to get to play Carnoustie. And to this day, it's still the best golf course I've ever played, and I've played a few, Glen Eagle, St Andrews, Turnberry. Carnoustie to me is still the best.
Really?
It's still the best.
What makes it stand out so much then?
It was just, although Turnberry and Glen Eagles are the iconic courses, just Carnoustie, just to me, was the best of them all. The best of them all. And just the layout, just the welcome you got up there as well. So, and I can't even remember what hole it was. It's Hogan's Alley, they call it. And a nice drive. I put my approach shot right onto the green, 18 inches from the hole.
Oh.
And
so it's a par 4, is it?
It's par 4.
Yeah.
And tapped in for the birdie and I actually turned out my mates. I says, I can walk off now. That's my utopia. I have birdied Hogan's Alley. And that to me is my best golf shot, my favourite golf shot. I've never had a hole in one, so I'd like to say that was my favourite golf shot, but I've been very close, but never had one.
I love that story because I think you can safely say in your case that not literally the eagle, the birdie landed, but you know when I've asked this before, my friend Ben, when asked about this, he talks. You played St Andrews, the old course.
No, I've not played the old course.
No. So he talks about having hit it through the Valley of Sin on the 18th hole and chipped it to about 10 feet and then three putted. So I said, no eagle, no birdie landed here, you know. It's like, you know, so you actually knocked in the birdie there. So that's great.
So that was, it was utopia for me. I said, well, it's Hogan's Alley. It's iconic goal. An iconic golf hole. I've birdied it.
That's brilliant.
I can walk off now. I could literally have walked off the golf course there and then saying, I've done it.
That's it. Completed it, mate. Very good. Well, Craig, listen, I think that's probably all we've got time for in this particular episode, but I just wanted to firstly thank you again for agreeing to be on the podcast. Yeah,
thank you for inviting me on.
Secondly, thank you for being, you're an inspiration to me and to my family, and I'm sure to many other people out there listening to
you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Well, cheers, Craig.
Thank you.
I never met the angel, she ran from paradise. She came to fight more battles than she should. The barricades of Paisley burning down with her one love. Dancing in cathedrals she would. This is what her father says. This is what her father says. You are the sound of a thousand oceans. You are the light of a thousand stars. Because I know you're watching us, I'm trying to stand up and remember who I was. No tears in her suffering, just the colors of the dawn, holding us together with her heart. 22 her number, she was always coming home. Joy and morning sun to us. And this is what her father says. And this is what her father says. You are the sound of a thousand oceans. You are the light of a thousand stars. Because I know you're watching us, I'm trying to stand up and remember who I was. And this is what my father says. Always remember. Trying to stand up and remember who I was. She is the sound of a thousand oceans. She is the light of a thousand stars. heart.